This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Baby, I'm home.
Well, thank you, Parker. It's such an honor to be here, and welcome to Time Signatures. To all of you, I'm your host, Jim Irvin. And I remember asking myself in the middle of season three how we were ever going to be able to top what we did last season. Well, I'm humbled, honored, and blessed to have way outperformed last season. But that's not because of me. That's thanks to many people who are PR reps at record labels. Also, more importantly, a few friends that I've made along the way, like Michelle Seidman of the National Women in Blues. And on a more personal level, people like you, our friends, our listeners, and our supporters. I just wanted to say thank you at the top of this episode because we have another big name to share with you today. And so, off we go. Today's guest made her stage debut on what could arguably be called the biggest stage of her lifetime. If you can imagine this, the 1969 Ann Arbor Blues Festival was truly one for the ages, with blues musicians like B.B. King, Freddie King, Muddy Waters, Big Mama Thornton, and Luther Allison, just to name a few. Yeah, that's where she started. But she solidified her position in the Detroit music scene, and she also dabbled in acting, landing parts in two life-changing plays, Hair and Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band On the Road. Now, along the way, she's recorded with the likes of Meatloaf, Eric Clapton, and Bob Seger as well. I could go on and keep on listing accomplishments and accolades, but I genuinely love hearing these stories from the people themselves, and I would love to just turn it over to you, Sean Murphy. Welcome to Time Signatures. How are you?
I'm great. It's great to be here, Jim. Thanks for having me.
It is an honor to have you, and I have to start at the beginning, as I do with most of my guests. What are your earliest memories of music?
Gee, I would say five to eight, I guess. My dad was a big music buff, and he brought home this little tiny record player, the kind that you see up at Walmart now.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a bunch of 45s, and he turned us all on to Elvis Presley. So we danced like mad, and we weren't allowed to even look at the records or touch them. So,
but you were able to enjoy them, right?
Oh, yes. We played them all the time.
Very cool. Now, when did the blues come into your life officially?
Well, I've always listened to blues. Back then, there was really no FM yet. And so all the AM radio mm-hmm. stations, if you could stay up that late, you could get radio from all over the United States, and got a lot of stations from down south, and a lot of blues and a lot of James Brown, which I loved. So I got a chance to listen to all that. Of course, 1969 turned it all around for me.
Yeah, you know, that's a great springboard, because that's the next question on my list here. You were at a place where literally anybody who is anybody in the blues was there. And I would love to hear your story, Sean. I got to hear it firsthand. How did this opportunity present itself to you? And talk about this incredible event. Would you do that for me, please?
Sure. Well, I had a band in Detroit called the Wilson Moore Pursuit, and we played just about every festival in the summertime that was there, some a little bit out of town. So we were called on quite a bit to play these festivals, and one of the festivals happened to be the Ann Arbor Blues Fest, and so we got a chance to play there. And normally, the drummer in the band was the only one that had a car, so we all had to ride with him. And if he didn't like anybody in the lineup, he went home early. And even though we played with all these wonderful people, we never got to see most of them because He just wanted to go home.
Oh, man.
Fortunately, he decided he wanted to stay for the Blues Fest. So I did get close up and personal to see my hero, Big Mama Thornton. And she pretty
Wow.
much changed my whole trajectory. I was pretty deep into the rock scene in the Detroit area and also acting still. But it was fantastic. And as it turned out, my husband at the time, well, husband later, I met him. He was playing with Luther Allison, so that was kind
Wow.
of a coup. But it
Wow.
was a time had by all, what can I say?
Yeah, no kidding. But what was that like standing off the side of the stage and watching these incredible musicians who were all, by that time, they were all really doing well, were they not?
Yeah, there was a big resurgence in blues back in the 60s, and it was great to see all these people in person. I mean, a lot of them were getting up in age, but it was just magic to watch.
You know, I actually have a copy. I have vinyl, and I have a copy of. I'm going to reach down and pull it out here live while we're doing this. This is the 1969 Ann Arbor Blues Fest on vinyl that I have,
Beautiful.
and it's got three or four albums in it. It's got reprints of the tickets. It's got reprints of the playbill. We have never seen a show like this. I don't think anywhere that's had this level of talent in that amount. Am I correct?
You are absolutely 100. They tried to replicate it in 72, but it didn't have the impact, sadly. But you couldn't go anywhere with that amount of talent in one space for less than $300 for per ticket to start. But I
Yeah.
think then it was like $10 is there prices on the tickets that you have?
There is, but I'm not going to open the box because it's
Oh.
really reflective. But
Boy.
it was cheap by comparison. As a matter of fact, I actually bought a copy of the ticket from 1972, and I will do that because it's on my phone. I'm going to zip in really quick and take a look at it because I can do it
Yeah,
fast.
please. We didn't see the tickets because we were playing the festival.
So the ticket back in 1972, $15 for all shows. And 72 was no slouch either.
No. It
Boogie
was
Woogie Red
well.
was there. I know, oh gosh, I can't remember them all. I know Steve Nardella was there playing, several great musicians, and I have that album as well. It's a double album. You know, when you look at that. And the tickets were probably, like you said, around $10. I've got to believe that based on this ticket price.
I know.
But it's something that I still hear people talking about, not just in Michigan, but all over the place. People are just blown away by the level. Whoever put that show together, man, that was their meal ticket for the rest of their life. I wish I could have been there. I honestly do. I get to do it vicariously through listening to the vinyl, which is every bit as cool. I mean, because you can't go back in time, but it's what I have, so I definitely enjoy it. Sean, talk about that recording contract with Motown and Rare Earth Records. I'd love to hear about that too.
Well, that was back in some things that I was doing as far as acting at the time in Detroit. And I was pregnant at the time, I think 3 months pregnant. And my husband saw a little blurb in one of the local little papers about they were holding auditions for this musical. And he says, yeah, he says, you sing. Why don't you go down and audition and see what it's about? So we went down there, and it was at the Vest Pocket Theater, which is no, I don't think it's there anymore, but it was quite an area to go to. But it had a real dark theater when you walked in. It was just, you could see the stage lit, and that was about it. So I walked in, and we're standing there trying to acclimate to the darkness, and all of a sudden I hear somebody scream, "There she is!" As it turns out, Well, they had the lineup of all of the judges right in the middle of the seats. And as it turned out, it was Meatloaf. And
Oh, wow.
what had happened, see, Meatloaf back in the day, back in the 60s, he lived in Midland, Michigan. And we used to play all these festivals together with his band. He had Pop
Wow.
Wizard and Floating Circus, I think, were two of the names of the bands he had. And so we got a chance to know each other back then. So when he moved out west, he was trying to get a job and acclimate to LA. And
Sure.
he said he was in the parking lot of the whatever venue that was hosting Hair at the time, and he wanted to try out. And they said, well, all the slots are full, but we're going to be opening a show in Detroit if you want to do that. And do you know anybody, singers, you know? He goes, yeah, I do, but I don't know how to find her because we had lost touch. So when I walked in, there was that big old voice. So I got up on stage. I did about, I don't know, one line in a song, and they said, okay, that's it. Thank you very much. I went, gee, that was fast. So I didn't think anything about it. Thank you very much. I didn't even get a chance to talk to him other than wave. And then so we went home, and later that night they called me and said that I got the lead in the show.
So for people that don't understand, when they usually say, thank you very much, that means you're done. You're not.
Yeah, see you later.
Goodbye. You move on. Yeah. Wow. That's crazy.
Well, in the South, we go, oh, bless your heart.
Yeah, I have heard that a few times. And that's usually not good. Well, now, Sean, you ended up recording with Meatloaf. You moved to L.A., but it was a serendipitous chat with Bob Seger's manager that led you back to the Motor City with a stint with Seger, correct?
I started working with Bob probably in the early 70s when I recorded Kathmandu and with another lady, I can't, Rocky Berlin, I think her name was.
Okay.
And then that was kind of it. And I was on my own doing other things at the time. But I just wanted to touch back with you wanted to know about Motown. The opening night at in Hair, all of the people from Motown and Rare Earth Records were there. So that led to them contacting both Meatloaf and I and said, we want to do a record with you two called Stoney and Meatloaf. Other than the gang, whole gang singing in on stage, we had no songs together or like duets or any interaction other than that. So we thought, well, why not? That sounds good. So that's how we got that contract. We did the record. It got released in 71. And we toured a little bit with it. And then it was right there. Motown was starting to be in a turmoil, you know, with the moving and the Berry Gordy stepping back and Suzanne DePass coming on board more often. So that was that. And so we just went on our separate ways. And of course he clicked big time with a lot of things going on with him. And I was so proud of him. And, he ended up coming back out of, New York, I think he was at the time. And I moved to Nashville, here in Nashville. We reconnected, and he was really excited about getting together and maybe doing an homage to the Stoney and Meatloaf record and having us do a duet song on his new record that he was planning. And wow. I turned him on to a lot of Nashville musicians and studios, and he was going to just get rip roaring going, and then he passed away all of a sudden. So it was really, really sad.
Now I have to ask you, where did Stoney come from? Is that something you came up with? Is that something they came up with, and how?
Well, back in Iowa, where I was going to school, there was a band that I really, really liked. I think they were just a school band, but they were a rock band, and the lead singer was named Stoney, and I thought, wow, that's a cool name, you know. And so when I started singing, when I moved to Detroit, I just said, you know, I don't want to use my real name, and I'm not going to do this for very long, so I'm going to use that name that I remember that I had. So that's how I came about. It wasn't any ulterior nothing going on with that. Very
do people still come up to you and call you Stoney after all these years?
I have a few friends that still call me Stoney. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, after you toured a bit with Bob, you happened upon yet another powerful opportunity with Eric Clapton and Phil Collins with that collaboration. Love to hear that story as well.
Well, you know, when I was first working with Bob back in the 70s and we were touring, I toured with this wonderful lady, Marcy Levy, who's also Marcella Detroit, for those of you in the know. And so we had a great time working with Bob. And as it happens, Bob disbanded. That was called the Borneo Band. Short-lived, but great musicians, Jamie Oldecker on drums, Drew Abbott on guitar, alto was in the band as Tom Cartmell. Dick Sims was on B3 and kick pedals, so there was no bass player at the time.
Wow.
Right towards the end of that incarnation, he had Dick Sims come off the pedals, and he brought Chris Campbell on board. And so we played for a while with that incarnation, and it was glorious. You know, we even went into the studio in I think it was Cleveland. I don't think it was ever released. That's something you might want to suss out. I think it's online somewhere, the Cincinnati or Cleveland tapes, I think it is. And he had Marcy and I do solo songs, and we were just like, it sounded like we'd had, you know, too much good stuff. Like we were on speed or something. We're like, yeah, in the background, pipe down. But that turned out fun. But I don't think he ever released that. It just somehow got online. But
wow.
That sort of faded away. And then again, we parted ways and did other things. And of course, Marcy went on to do Shakespeare's Sister and a million other great things. And we're great, really close friends. But back in, I think it was 78, Bob started listening a lot to the tapes because there was no singers in the band other than the guys playing the instruments. And he started listening to everybody. And of course, A being him with the records, which did have background singers on it. And he said, you know, I'm going to bring in Sean. So he called me up. I was staying with my dad in Florida. And he said, what do you think about, you know, going on the road? I said, oh, sure. So I came back to Detroit and started working with Bob right then and there. And about halfway through the tour, he said, you know, that does sound really good. I'm going to bring another girl in for backgrounds. And he did happen to know this girl. Her name was Laura Creamer, and she was under the guise of Honey Limited in an all-girl singing band back in Detroit. And Punch, Bob's manager, was managing them at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So no rehearsal. She comes walking in, and she's going to sing that night at the show. And I'm like freaked out for her. So we're at soundcheck. She's like trying to get together and get the harmonies together because, you know, it was all new to her. So
right.
I said, look, I have a plan. I'm going to grab the back of you and push you up to the microphone when it's ready to sing. And then I'm going to pull you back when you're going to stop. We did that all night. She was wonderful. And obviously she was still there till the end.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, how about the collaboration with Clapton and Phil Collins? I would love to hear about that.
Well, that again was, God bless Marcy Levy. She She's always been in contact with Eric. Of course, she's co-written a lot of songs and written songs for him along the way. So, The Core, Tangled in Love, and a bunch of other stuff. And so he said, "Well, I'm going to have you come and sing on the new record, but do you know any women with strong voices?" And she said, "I do, as a matter of fact." And she called me up and said, "Well, Eric's people are going to be calling you to work this out." So they called me like maybe an hour later or something, and they said, "We want you to come down and work on the record." So I said, "Oh, great, and I'd love to." And it was in Montserrat at George
Okay.
Martin's studio, and so it had all of the Beatles and the Apple gear there. So
Wow.
just, it was all like, wow,
Yeah.
So anyway, after the first song, we're taking a break already, and Phil Collins was the producer, as a matter of fact, and he was stellar. He had everything, boom, 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 right in a line, no muss, no fuss, and he was just so organized, and it was just great to work with him too. So anyway, after the first song, Eric came in. He goes, "How would you like to support the album on tour with us?" And I just went, "Give me a minute." Yes, that's how it was. Those times were just one thing after another. It was just happening so fast with so many different groups that I worked with. It was
Yeah.
blissful. And but I have to say that Eric was probably one of the best experiences that I've ever had. Of course, we did Live Aid, and that's another wild story. Just I don't know if you've ever felt anything like this, but I'd never had any experience like this. And we were on getting on stage, and Eric was like doing a little bit of noodling, just to check the monitors and everything. So then he started playing a couple of notes to the first song, and the audience en masse put out this huge yell. And I'm telling you, it was the hugest sound I've ever encountered, and it actually became physical. And
Wow.
we all just took two steps back. It was just phenomenal. I'd never felt anything like it. I mean, it was
Wow.
101,000 people, I believe, but in amazing, just amazing.
What year was that?
That was 1985, July 13th.
That was, isn't that when Queen went out?
Oh yes,
Oh my Lord,
everybody and
you
their
were
mother was on
there.
the.
Oh, girl. What? Okay. I mean, I could just go all night with this, but what was that like being at that particular Live Aid? That had to have been, I mean, what you just described is incredible, but I got goosebumps, man.
Well, that's the real draw, one drawback of the whole experience. There were so many acts so quickly, and the timing, Geldof had the timing just down to a T. There was no side stage. So nobody could stand offside and watch any bands, and you could
Sure.
hear them. And back in the green room, there was video going, but that was,
Okay.
not the same thing. It was like watching them on TV. So that was kind of a drag.
Where can folks go to find more information about you? Maybe buy some merch, some CDs, or book you for a gig, Sean.
Well, you can go to my website, seanmurphyband.com. It's got just pages of all kinds of stuff, and obviously there's a store there, and my manager TC Davis for booking, and I want to see all my friends out there. So you bookers, call us. We want to get out there and do stuff with you. But his information is on there as well. Lowroad7 at yahoo.com is his email. And
Okay.
he's waiting to take your emails about booking. Come on.
And for God's sake, somebody in Michigan bring her up here, would you please? I would love to see
I
this
want to
woman
play
perform.
Michigan again. We used to come
Yeah.
release all of our singles at Callahan's
Okay.
up to 10, 9 or 10 that we did release singles there. Did a live record there.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was a fun time. And I miss Mike Moss and the whole crew there.
Is the Callahan's album still out there available, or do I?
Yes, you can get it through my website.
Okay.
And please, I used to be with CD Baby as a physical distributor, and they
okay.
don't do that. So they farm it out to Amazon and iTunes and all that kind of stuff. But if anybody wants physical copies, they can contact me through TC Davis physical work. And we also have a DVD of Live from Callahan's, but
oh nice.
Yeah, we don't
nice.
Have that listed any place but the website.
Well, now I got homework. And, you know, as I said, I believe in supporting my musicians that come on here. And I promise you, I will go to that website and look for some information. Sean Murphy, it has indeed been a pleasure to have you here today. Thank you so much for joining me. And anytime at all that you need a microphone in the future for the CD, for a tour, whatever you have, you give me a call, have TC call me, we'll get you on. I promise you that.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Wonderful show.
Thank you.
I just had a great time.
Well, so, as I said, it was a pleasure to have you here, and I appreciate you sharing your stories so well with us. And that wraps up this edition of Time Signatures. Once again, my thanks to Sean Murphy, but also to you, for without you, none of this would be possible. Jim Riven reminding you, keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues one story at a time, that's my mission. Until next time, so long, everybody.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up in
Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.